Hello, everyone. This is Wayne Mattson, not delayed, taped, or anything else, but live this evening from Washington, D.C. with the Wayne Mattson Report, the Saturday Roundup. We were happy and actually sad last week to have attended the annual, what I call the Naval Gazing Exercise in Washington. It's otherwise known as the White House Correspondents' Dinner. I've never been to it before. I never thought that if you're an investigative reporter, you should be socializing with some of the people that you're covering. But a very old hand at the broadcast journalism invited me. He said it would be a good idea. So that's where I was last week, rubbing shoulders with, well, the great and not so great and the nearly great in Washington, D.C. It was nice to run into John McLaughlin from the McLaughlin Group, the longtime host of that political talk show. And it was nice to hear that he reads Wayne Mattson Report. So there was some good things that came out of the otherwise often one of these see and be seen, people just, you know, the who's who of the glitterati and the punditocracy of Washington, D.C., they were all there. But anyway, we'll talk a little bit about what happened at the White House Correspondents' Dinner and how news is often made in this town. It's not made because of events. It's manufactured by the media themselves. And there was all this hoopla over the comedian speech following President Obama's speech by Wanda Sykes, a comedian who actually used to work at the National Security Agency. Many people might be surprised to hear that. So we'll talk a little bit about the White House Correspondents' Dinner, some of the conversations I had with some folks, and it's something I don't want to make a habit of. Actually, there's the news that's made these functions is made on purpose. I mean, it's already, you know, they bring all these controversial speakers in. It happened, of course, back in the Clinton administration when they had Don Imus give the remarks. And we saw it a few years ago with Stephen Colbert. And, of course, that's all done in advance. They know that these people are controversial. But it's just an attempt to make news that's not important news. But we'll talk about the important news, the real news, and not what happened at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. We will talk about what's going on with H1N1, the AH1N1 hybrid, and as I reported this past week, synthetic influenza virus that has reached pandemic proportions according to the World Health Organization. And towards the end of the show, we'll be talking about something that I usually don't spend a lot of time on. There's a lot of people to cover the Bilderberg group, but they're meeting. They have been meeting in Greece. There's also been a meeting in Jordan, the World Economic Forum. Same time, we'll talk about these elitist oligarchic groups that meet periodically and, frankly, are up to no good. So we'll talk about that, and we'll also take your phone calls. And we will be back with your phone calls and with comments right after this short break. This is Wayne Mattson from Washington.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Okay, welcome back. This is Wayne Mattson with Wayne Mattson Report, the Saturday Roundup, coming to you live this evening from the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., and the call-in number, if you'd like to call into the program, the toll-free call-in number is 800-313-9443. That's 800-313-9443. I was mentioning the White House Correspondents' Dinner, which was this time last week at the Washington Hilton, what we locally refer to as the Hinckley Hilton, of course, that's in jest, but it was the same, very same Hilton Hotel where John Hinckley, longtime family friend of the Bush family, took a couple of shots, one hitting President Reagan and almost putting George H.W. Bush in the presidency in March of 1981, and how things could have really been much worse than they were in the 1980s. Had Bush gotten into the White House a lot sooner, that probably would have meant we would have had W as president in the 90s instead of after the turn of the millennium. But anyway, a lot of hoopla was made over this comedian Wanda Sykes and her joking about Rush Limbaugh, as if Rush Limbaugh is some sanctified person in this country. Rush Limbaugh is a right-wing, draft-dodging, drugged-up, OxyContin, Viagra trips to the Dominican Republic, and we don't want to get into why guys Rush Limbaugh's age fly to the Dominican Republic, to the particular area he went to in the Dominican Republic with a pocket full of Viagra, but just let your imagination wander on that one. Anyway, let's listen to what got Wanda Sykes, and of course the crazies out there tried to implicate the Obama administration. The Obama administration has a lot of things that they can be blamed for, but not having Wanda Sykes on the dais at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. But let's hear what Wanda Sykes had to say about Limbaugh.
Rush Limbaugh, one of your big critics. Rush Limbaugh said he hopes this administration fails. Yeah. So you're saying, I hope America fails. He's like, I don't care about people losing their homes or jobs or our soldiers in Iraq. He just wants the country to fail. To me, that's treason. He's not saying anything differently than what Osama bin Laden is saying. You know, you might want to look into this, sir, because I think maybe Rush Limbaugh was the 20th hijacker, but he was just so strung out on OxyContin, he missed his flight. But you're laughing inside. I know you're laughing. Rush Limbaugh, I hope the country fails. I hope his kidneys fail. How about that?
Well, that was the, of course, that was what got all the talking heads and the this idiot on CNN, John King, thought it was way over the top. John King is way over the top. I mean, how this guy can call himself a news reporter is beyond me. Just like CNN thinks that Larry King has talent. Where? Okay, maybe Wanda Sykes isn't the funniest comedian in the world. Somebody actually that evening said she reminded him of Mom's Mabley with a full set of teeth. Nevertheless, anytime anyone makes any kind of joke about 9/11, and I have to say there was kind of a hidden meaning there. Rush Limbaugh was the 20th hijacker. Well, you know, we were all told that, you know, 9/11 was brought about by 19 Arabs with box cutters that brought down a multi-trillion-dollar defense and intelligence system in this country in a matter of a couple of minutes one morning in September of 2001. That is frankly beyond belief. As a matter of fact, in the investigations I did on the hijackers in New Jersey and North Jersey, I found out that those who hijacked Flight 93 out of Newark were at a strip club the night before. They were not reading the Quran. They were putting dollar bills in G-strings. They had this movie they made about that where they were all shaved themselves, their bodies, and were reading the Quran. It's hocus pocus, just like an awful lot of things are hocus pocus. So the mere fact that Wanda Sykes brought up something like, well, maybe one of the hijackers was the hero of the right wing. Well, you heard the boos from the audience, but you know the truth hurts with these people. I think maybe Wanda Sykes was a lot closer to the truth than many people might believe, and certainly we're as the months go by since that day, 9/11, 2001, we're finding out more and more things about that incident that would tend not to support the official U.S. government conspiracy theory, which is called the 9/11 Commission Report. But the way this news is manufactured, of course, the next day, for 2 days, they were talking about how the Fox table reacted to President Obama's digs on them, and Michael Steele, the RNC chairman, Obama. And this is all manufactured. This is not news. This is all this inside the Beltway stuff. But the White House Correspondents' Dinner now, in the last several years, has now involved more people from Hollywood. So it's where Hollywood. Where actors try to be like politicians, and politicians try to be like actors, and of course the media, especially the television media, try to be both. They try to be actors and celebrities and politicians, and they fail on, most of them fail on all three counts. But that's Washington as we've come to know it today. It's all inside stuff. What's happening out in places like Toledo? I talked to somebody last night from Toledo, Ohio, that they like many other industrial cities that have seen their jobs just sucked out to places like Mexico, across savage giant sucking sound. These are blighted. We hope in any of these cities like Toledo and Detroit now with the automobile companies about one filing for Chapter 11, General Motors, Chrysler also, and Ford on the ropes. It's a very bleak future out there, but you wouldn't really notice it if you were with the glitterati and the punditocracy at the Hinckley Hilton in Washington, D.C. last Saturday. But that's just the nature of the beast. I'm afraid, and we've tried to change it. We thought Obama was going to change it, and with his keeping the military commissions, keeping them in Guantanamo, which I thought he said he was going to close. Apparently he's flip-flopped on that, on the commissions, releasing the torture of detainee photos. Well, let's just put it this way. President Obama is the same kind of flip-flopping candidate that John Kerry was in 2004, and what we're seeing with the Obama administration is exactly what we would have gotten with the Kerry administration. It would have been nice if we had Kerry, anything to get that madman, George W. Bush and his madman partner, Dick Cheney, out of office, but the flip-flopping, nevertheless, would have happened just like we're seeing today. It would have happened under the Kerry administration, a Kerry administration, as it's happening right now with the Obama administration, because it's the same players, the same people in both campaigns. They're in the positions of authority today. And we'll talk about that when we get into who was in attendance at the Bilderberg meeting in Greece towards the end of the program. Anyway, if you'd like to call into the program tonight, again, the toll-free number is 800-313-9443, 800-313-9443. H1N, the H1N1 virus, which has been misidentified as the swine flu. It is not passed from pigs to humans. Previous cases might have been that way, but this is as I reported, I have a mole within the research community who's been working on developing H1N1. Developing it. So the impact is It's been developed in a laboratory. It is not naturally occurring. It's the product of gene splicing. It has two forms of human flu, two forms of swine flu, and one form of bird avian flu. That is something that has been manufactured. I have a mole in the research community who's been working on this gene splicing. And let's talk about also what happened this past week. Two laboratories that have been involved in the gene splicing of H1N1, University of Wisconsin in Madison and the National Microbiology Laboratory run by the Canadian government in Winnipeg, were involved in the gene splicing of H1N1, and it just turns out that we found out this week, but it happened on May 5th, a individual from the Winnipeg facility was found carrying deadly Ebola genetic strains of material over the Manitoba-North Dakota border. He was arrested by the FBI, and Winnipeg and Madison have been working in tandem, and it seems quite positive to say that the route he was taking to his supposed new job at the National Institute of Health here in Washington would have taken him right through Madison, Wisconsin, on I-94. We will talk about more of this after the short break. This is Wayne Madison.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Okay, welcome back. This is Wayne Madison with the Wayne Madison Report. This is Saturday Roundup live tonight from Washington, D.C. And well, let's go to the telephones. Let's bring in Kathy from Louisiana. Are you on with us?
Hi, Wayne.
Hi, how are you? Good to have you back again. And talking, of course, about H1N1, which is now, you know, everyone's calling it the swine flu, but not one human has gotten this particular strain from a pig. We know that there's been this joint research between University of Wisconsin and Madison and the Canadian laboratory in Winnipeg, and now, lo and behold, on May 5th, the FBI nabs a guy on the Manitoba-North Dakota border, making a beeline for Washington, but putting him right through Madison on Interstate 94. So I'd just like to play this short clip of this is how Anderson Cooper, who probably has this rich mommy, Gloria Vanderbilt, mommy, I'd like to be a guy like Peter Jennings or Dan Rather, and she has had enough money and influence, of course, to get him a slot on CNN. The guy's not a journalist. He's a hack. Okay, we had a little problem there. Maybe it had something to do with some nasty thunderstorms that have been going across the country. We just had one here in Washington about an hour ago. But let's go back to the back to the phones. Are you still with us, Kathy?
Yes, I am.
Okay. I almost was hoping you would take over the program if I could get back online here because everything just went dead all of a sudden. But maybe they don't want us talking about H1N1 or Ebola. What I was mentioning was that this individual who's a native of the Ivory Coast was detained at the border. And, you may have a little more information on that that individual if you'd like to talk about him.
I don't think I know more about him than you do. I've been trying to find out more information about him, but it doesn't seem, it appears that there isn't much more out there on the internet regarding him and his previous research. I was curious to see if he had been a contractor, but I did notice that it said he was working on a fellowship, and that's how he was at the National Microbiology laboratory, and then it said he was going on to another fellowship at the National Institutes of Health. So he's not actually working for a company. So the fellowship thing is very interesting. I was wondering if it had a name. I couldn't find that. But if this, if he left in January, what's he been doing for the past 4 months? I didn't understand.
Well, that's right.
That. Yeah.
That's right. And where did he have these? If he left in January and he stole these Ebola genetic material, which I know that the Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta said it's not dangerous, but why was it then kept in a what's called a biosafety level 4 laboratory in Winnipeg? You know, these scientists are being fast and loose with some of this material, and I think when you talk about security in that environment, it really doesn't exist that much. But anyway.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Okay, welcome back. This is Wayne Metz with the Wayne Metz Report, coming to you live tonight from Washington, D.C. And we were talking about H1N1, the synthetic virus. It's not swine flu. Swine flu is has been genetically spliced in, at least two types of swine flu, also two types of human flu, and one strain of avian flu. But anyway, we were talking to Kathy about the incident with the guy trying to bring Ebola across the U.S.-Canadian border, headed to Washington, to the NIH, National Institutes of Health, when he was caught by the FBI. He left his job in January, but we don't know where he's been with these Ebola strains. Also, apparently, he had some HIV strains with him, too. Said it was for private research, but he seemed to have been able to walk out the door of a BSL-4 laboratory in Winnipeg with this material. But anyway, Kathy, you were mentioning some of the things you had looked at with that.
Correct. I had mentioned the fellowship. He's not actually a government employee nor a contractor. Something else that I was what puzzled me was how they actually managed to catch him with these when he was crossing the border. They don't necessarily do a thorough inspection of everyone's vehicles as they're crossing. So if he was in the process of moving, I wondered, well, wouldn't his trunk have been filled with personal items? And if it had been filled, then they must have been looking for something specifically. I was curious if they were actually waiting for him at the border, if they had in fact realized that something was missing.
Yes.
If he had a kid in a glove and it was wrapped in aluminum foil and then placed in a plastic bag.
That's right. So it was clearly he was trying to counter any sort of X-ray machines and use at the border by wrapping it in foil. Also, there has been this sort of underground, I think, off the books trading of HIV, H1N1, and Ebola material between the University of Wisconsin and Madison and Winnipeg, because Madison shut down its Ebola research when they found out it was being conducted in a less secure biosafety level 3 laboratory. It has to be done in a 4, so they moved it up to the 4 laboratory in Winnipeg. But, you know, it seems to be very little control over what's going on as far as transferring this material over the U.S. Canadian border. Now we know that there's been some reports that H1N1 may have been transmitted as a result of a quote-unquote accident at a laboratory in Mexico City that's owned by an Israeli pharmaceutical company. So that, coupled with the explosion of a canister on a passenger train in Switzerland a few weeks ago, and the transfer of H1N1 material from Vienna to the Czech Republic, you got to stop and wonder what is going on here. And we do now know, based on leaks out of the Bilderberg meeting, that pandemic was being discussed by capitalist. Well, they're the real carriers of swine flu, because they are swine themselves. David Rockefeller, we know that Timothy Geithner was over there at Bilderberger, Larry Summers, Robert Zoellick, the head of the World Bank, Richard Holbrooke, who's Hillary Clinton's special envoy to Afghanistan and Pakistan, and the president of the European Central Bank and the European Commission president. At the same time, a bunch of other leaders were meeting on the Dead Sea, on the Jordan side, at the Middle East version of the World Economic Forum, another secretive meeting that's held every wintertime in Davos, Switzerland. You got to wonder, when all these people start meeting and you got a pandemic, what is really going on with these people? But I think hasn't there been some talk earlier about some studies that say that the world's population has to be decreased by, you know, an awful lot of people, like, you know, a couple of billion?
I think I had read somewhere. I can't remember if it was something that had been put out by the Council on Foreign Relations or the Bilderbergers.
Right.
But something
yeah.
that's interesting to point out, I think you will remember this. Baxter, the pharmaceutical company, had sent vaccines to several European countries that actually had live avian flu virus in the vials, and so that actually didn't get a lot of attention here. That was quite a mistake, if you would call it a mistake. I don't know how they could have managed to mix the two.
Yeah, I think the people who need to be waterboarded are the Bilderbergers and the people that attend the World Economic Forum, either in Davos or on the Dead Sea. These are the people we need to find. You know, it was interesting to note the AP story out of Greece on this Bilderberg meeting. The AP reporter says, Greek newspapers said the secret meeting of the politicians and managers of world capitalism included Greek Foreign Minister Dora Bakianis. And it's interesting because the two groups that were protesting them, of course, the group was protected by Navy commandos, two F-16s that were flying overhead, this resort hotel, police, tons of police. And it says that the two parties that were protesting them was the Greek right-wing party and the Greek Communist Party. So here you have the left and the right protesting against these managers of world capitalism. I mean, what's right with that picture? And then, of course, the Greek Orthodox Patriarch of Piraeus, which is a suburb of Athens, came out and said, you know, this is no conspiracy theorist. I mean, this is an official of the Greek Orthodox Church said, as far as he was concerned, that what was going on at the Bilderberg meeting was a meeting of the leading world, you know, Zionist leaders. I mean, you know, you expect to hear that from the usual sources, but maybe not so much from somebody in the Greek Orthodox Church at his level. But you got to stop and wonder with what's going on with the pandemic and these guys meeting, what's actually on the agenda. We know the pandemic was being discussed there, and they were talking about the need for a world, like a world public health organization. We already have the World Health Organization, but they were talking about something sort of like a world version of the Department of Health and Human Services.
I had not heard that at all. I don't know if you saw some quotes from Frank Plummer, the director of the National Microbiology Laboratory. He said that the vials went unnoticed for so long because there are tens of thousands of them containing non-infectious material in the laboratory's refrigerators and freezers. And I have a quote from him. He said, "We would never try to have an inventory of every little vial that we have in the laboratory. It's absolutely impossible, and no other laboratory in the world would have one inventory of that kind that would allow them to detect this." But if I'm not mistaken, the RFID technology is being pushed to manage logistics and supply chains. So actually, if they had used RFID technology on the vials, they could have tracked them.
Yeah, if they can't keep track of the world's deadliest viruses and pathogens, maybe they shouldn't have it anyway. Maybe they need to find another group of scientists who are willing to protect that. These guys sound like a bunch of Dr. Frankensteins running around. And we know that this H1N1 was extracted from the corpse of a Eskimo woman who died of the Spanish 1918 flu. Because she was so obese, they were able to extract genetic material. But it sounds like a bunch of Frankenstein, Dr. Frankensteins, with their Igors running around trying to raid graves. And it's, you know, like Jurassic Park, trying to bring back the dinosaurs. In this case, it may be even worse. They're bringing back deadly viruses that could, you know, kill billions of people around the world. But, Kathy, hold on. Let's bring Debbie in, who's on, been holding on patiently from Los Angeles. Debbie, are you on with us?
Hi, Wayne, I am.
Okay.
And it's been a really interesting conversation. And first of all, I want to say good luck with your upcoming court appearance next week. And I'm hoping all your listeners donate to your legal defense fund because you're the best journalist in the United States, I think. And at least you're bringing stuff up. I wanted to ask if you guys have heard anything about Codex Alimentarius. I just realized, I did some research and found out they actually have offices within our own USDA at the Food Safety and Inspection Service offices. And it was started in like the early 60s as a trade commission. But again, it's all these secret meetings and big pharma, big pharmaceutical companies, and like Monsanto and biotech companies. They like have these secret meetings and they have their little agenda with their guidelines and everything. And there's a slew of food safety bills upcoming that have a lot of language in them, like harmonization, premises instead of property, which if anyone looks at international law books, they realize if you have an animal, and this is bring something else you brought up a little bit with animals before, and it's this whole NAIS thing. We already have a tracking system. We know where everything comes from now. These 840 numbers they want to use on all of our U.S. animals are U.N. numbers. And they're trying to force all of our all of our farmers into using these numbers, and they have to sign a premises ID. And then they're stakeholders. They're not owners of their property. They're stakeholders. And their animals aren't their animals. They're part of the national herd. So I was wondering if you had heard anything, Wayne, about Codex Alimentarius at all, or...
I have not, but it's...
And if you go to the USDA website, I mean, they have... And a woman who worked there for many years is now the chair of Codex Alimentarius. So what I can see, it looks like an inside lobbying arm, and they're inside governments, you know, pushing things from that end. If they can't bribe all our elected officials, which they do, or get in that way, they're also going in the back door with this. So if anyone goes to the USDA website, they'll see it.
Okay, well, thanks for the heads up on that. And I would note that the people may remember what happened a couple months back where some strange-looking animal washed ashore in Long Island, and it was not too far from this Animal Plant Health Inspection Service facility on Plum Island, which starts starting to sound like the island of Dr. Moreau. But apparently another one of these creatures has recently washed ashore in the same area. So, my God, what is going on?
There's so many companies making cloned animals now. I was shocked when I found out. Pigs and everything they're doing. It's amazing.
It is, and there's no oversight. Kathy, I don't know if you, are you still with us? If you heard about the second weird animal that washed ashore up in Long Island?
No, I haven't heard about the second weird animal, but I do want to say that I heard something similar. I actually had read it. This registering of the animals, and the reason I heard about it was because they tried to get the Amish to do this, whoever these people were from the government, and the Amish did not want to do it.
Oh, the Amish, right.
But you see the USDA is trying to force them. You know, apparently this is something they've been trying to push through for years. So this is all years in the planning. You know, and now I'm wondering if they were trying to create some sort of a panic with this H1N1, and then that's when they're trying to push through you know, big processors having their, that have bad sanitation and don't have inspections, and then they blame it on our small farmers, you know.
Right. Well, I'll tell you, there's, this whole thing about what's going on in these research laboratories. I know a little bit about what was going on in the nuclear laboratories, like at Los Alamos. Remember the big espionage problem in the 1990s with Wen Ho Lee and all these nuclear secrets walking out the door. You know, a lot of that had less to do with espionage and just poor security. They didn't care what was going out the door. They were, you know, they were taking hard drives, computer hard drives out the door. They were taking diskettes. They were taking paper documents. And, you know, this is nuclear weapons design information. So, you know, if these people cannot be trusted to maintain this nuclear information and this biohazard information or biohazard material. Maybe they just don't need to have access to it. Maybe their access needs to be taken away. Find scientists. There's enough unemployed people around, including in the research community. I'm sure we can replace these people who want to be sloppy with this with people who would, you know, treat this material, this information a lot better. And certainly the idea that we have scientists just willy-nilly taking this stuff, you know, across international boundaries just because they say they, you know, they need it. Well, I'm sorry. I mean, that's every spy that ever took any classified document out of a place that we did it because we needed it. You know, we needed to sell it. We needed it for whatever reason. So, anyway, Debbie, thanks for calling in from Los Angeles.
Thanks, Wayne. Bye.
Okay. Thank you. If we can play this a short clip, if there's time, this is a clip from a movie that came out called Outbreak. It came out in 1995, starred Dustin Hoffman, Donald Sutherland, Rene Russo, this was about an outbreak of a hemorrhagic fever like Ebola in a small town in California. Let's listen to this clip of what's being discussed about how to treat this outbreak in the White House cabinet room.
The most optimistic projection USAM RID is willing to make for the spread of the virus is this: 24 hours, 36 hours, 48 hours. The curtailment procedure must be viewed objectively. Be compassionate, but be compassionate globally. Thank you.
All right. Please. The president's ETA from the East Asian Economic Summit is about 20 hours from now. He wants a recommendation by then from this group. Now, as I understand it, you want to firebomb the town of Cedar Creek, California, population 2,600, with something called a fuel air bomb, the most powerful non-nuclear weapon in our arsenal. The way it works, it explodes, sucks in all available oxygen to the core, vaporizes everything within a mile of ground zero, men, women, children, and one airborne virus. Destruction complete, case closed, crisis over.
Fever spread by a monkey from a hot zone in Africa, and the discussion in the White House cabinet room is dropping a fuel air bomb on this small town, killing everybody in the town, sucking up all the oxygen, just incinerating the entire town. You know, that type of stuff is not so much fiction, because when we're talking about forced quarantines, of course, 1995 outbreak came out. That was long before we had the Department of Homeland Security. In those days, it was FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Agency, and the CDC. But, you know, it's some of the same types of players involved. You know, this is a case of the inmates running the asylum, and they're coming up with all kinds of different scenarios like this. But anyway, we will hopefully get back to your calls. So hold on after this short break that's coming up.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back. This is Wayne Mastin with the Wayne Mastin Report, Saturday Roundup, and we are coming live tonight from Washington. Kathy, hold on with us, because we've got Mike calling in from Maryland. Mike, are you with us?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Great show as always. Always good to listen to you, and that lady that's talking on the show, she's really interesting to listen to as well. I want to mention something to you that, with these globalist Bilderbergers et al., you know, whatever you want to call them, it gives new meaning to the term no rest for the wicked. And
that's right.
You know, and these clowns won't give up. I'm sure you remember back in 2002 or 2003, they tried to get everybody to take a smallpox vaccination. That fell flat. Then they had the SARS scare, and that kind of like whittled away. And then for the past couple of years, they've been drumming up this bird flu pandemic. And then, of course, you know, your friend mentioned, you know, Baxter, and then this guy from Canada, Ebola. And,
yes.
You know, this goes back, you know, I'm sure you know, probably in the 1918 swine flu, most people who died were the ones who got the vaccinations. And right. They have it. I'm sorry.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, and they have the, you know, they have the, League of Nations ready to institute world government when the order out of chaos ensued. But it wasn't quite chaotic enough for them. They had plans to send in foreign troops in the United States if we would have acquiesced to the League of Nations. And I don't know if you're familiar with the Georgia Guidestones in Alberton, Georgia. Are you familiar with that?
No, I'm not.
Google Georgia Guidestones in Alberton, Georgia, and it's kind of like a neo-Stonehenge type of monument. These tin slabs are so very expensive edifice, similar to Stonehenge, with all these nice platitudes of peace and harmony and living in and harmony with nature and, you know, all these nice things. But the coup de grace is you get down to their, I guess, the most important thing there is that to keep the population down to 500 million. In order that,
yes, this, right.
Mm-hmm. In order for that to happen, 6 million people have to die. So
well,
you need to keep things in perspective, like the whole 9/11 and this whole police state that they're, I'm sure you're aware of, that they're instituting virtually worldwide is in order for them to carry out this global holocaust of killing billions of people, they have to herd us into the concentration camps or herd us into a police state in order to bring that off. So that's one thing that we have
right.
to keep in mind.
Right. Well, thanks. And you mentioned Google, and Eric Schmidt, the CEO of Google, was also at the Bilderberg meeting. So I don't know what they've got in store for Google. It has been a tool, but we know that with, like, Oracle, the database, the seed money largely came from CIA venture capital resources. Anyway, thanks for calling in, Mike. We've got Marilyn holding on from California. We've only got a couple of minutes, but let's bring Marilyn on if you've got
a call at the last minute,
comment.
Wayne. Just wanted to tell you, they're getting ready to move this Plum Island Animal Disease Center, which is, you know, it's off the tip of Long Island.
Right.
And it, you know, it was originally set up after World War II to study foot and mouth disease, even though there was
right.
actually no disease in this country. And after they were set up, it became a problem. But they're getting ready to move
right.
that site, which has been the site of the mysterious Lyme disease came from that area, which I think was probably some, you know, literally, created disease. They're going to move that site
right.
all the way to the middle of the country, right in the middle of
well,
the
wonderful.
Country.
Thanks for well, thanks for the warning us, Marilyn and Kathy. Thanks for calling in, and that'll do it for another episode of swine flu, H1N1, and all the other nasty things are cooking up. This is Wayne Massa with the Wayne Massa Report. Join us this time next week.